The Italian Wine Podcast is the community-driven platform for Italian wine geeks around the world. Support the show by donating at italianwinepodcast.com. Donate 5 or more euros and we'll send you a copy of our latest book, My Italian Grape Geek Journal, absolutely free. To get your free copy of My Italian Grape Geek Journal, click support us at italianwinepodcast.com or wherever you get your pods. Grazie mille.
Welcome to another episode of On the Road Edition, hosted by Stevie Kim. Each week, she travels to incredible wine destinations, interviewing some of the Italian wine scene's most interesting personalities, talking about wines, the foods, as well as the incredible travel destinations.
Hello, everybody. My name's Stevie Kim. Welcome back. I'm looking for Jeff. Here we go.
Hey, Jeff.
Ciao.
Hey, finally, how are you?
Hi, bene, grazie.
Come stai? Grazie. Facciamo in italiano ora.
Sì, certo.
So, as you know, you guys, this is called...
Domani io parlo italiano adesso.
Ma da 2 settimane o fra 2 settimane?
No, it's been, right, 3 weeks since we talked? I can't remember.
Yeah, it's been good. I mean, you're good. How do you feel?
Va bien, va bien.
Va bien?
Yeah, look at this.
Yeah.
Look where I am right. The Duomo of
Orvieto. Oh, okay. It's beautiful. It's absolutely gorgeous. Have you been inside the church?
I was there today, yeah. I'm here on a research trip about Umbria, and I had a private tour, and I learned all about the really famous artist who painted The Last Judgment.
Right.
That kind of inspired Michelangelo. And then I got to go into their archives, which start in the 1200s. I have a video of touching vellum that Pope Nicholas VI in 1292 basically commissioned the building.
So are you doing this for wine enthusiasts? Are you doing it for yourself? What are you doing?
I'm doing it for myself.
Okay. Where can we follow you with this?
I'm going to put this content up on Instagram and TikTok. And then in the fall, I'll be doing a 5-city tour of Umbrian education.
Okay.
We're going to go to Houston, Nashville, New York, Boston, and somewhere else. I forgot. I can't remember.
What does that mean? Like, you'll have a group of Umbrian producers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How, so we're kind of.
How many?
9.
Okay.
And it's pan Umbria. So it's going to be producers from Orvieto, Transamino, Lungarotti, which is their own appellation, and then Montefeltro.
Okay. Since there are 9, can you tell us who they are? I guess
it switches depending in each city.
Okay. So not necessarily the same producers.
Right. The same theme, the same idea, mm-hmm. because they asked me to kind of think about Umbria as a place. Like, you know, it's a really beautiful region for those that haven't been here, and the food is killer.
Mm-hmm.
For those that don't know, they have a lot of truffles here too, black and white.
I think mostly black though, right?
They actually have a high percentage of white truffles that get turned into something else when they leave Umbria. They asked me to come down and kind of explore the region and kind of put together a story to draw people in. I mean, they have a story. It's just to kind of put it all, you know, stitch it together into a quilt about Umbria, why it's important. So I'm excited to check it out. I just got here. I flew here this morning.
From where? From Torino?
From Torino.
Yeah. Okay.
You're in New York.
Yeah, I'm in New York. I'm actually now out in Long Island, in Norfolk.
Nice.
Yeah. Like all the way out near the Orient, between the Orient and Greenport, basically. Do you know this area at all?
It's so beautiful. Yes. I love it. Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's a little bit colder than Italy. So I'll probably go back out like Wednesday or Thursday, something like back into the city. But, you know, I'm working from here and it's been actually pretty nice. So listen, Jeff, you know, what I would like to do is, you know, besides your Italian course, of course, I just want to remind everyone who's joining us now, this is the Italian Wine Podcast special edition. It's called living the Dolce Vita with Jeff Porter. And basically, it's been three episodes, like three Insta Lives, right? And then we took a break for a little bit. Grande Jeff, JB Waiter, DB Waiter. And then we had some scheduling issues. So we used to do at 1 o'clock on Tuesdays or Thursdays, I think. But now we're going to try to do 6 p.m. Italian time so that we get a little more Americans, if you will. And then, as you know, we replay this. Laika, who's our Clubhouse manager, Italian Wine podcast producer, she will post-produce this and put it in a smaller version on the replay on Italian Wine podcast. So everyone who can't join us, of course, that's our strength. I was just reading on, you know, there's this like classification from BuzzFeed or something like that. And I never understood why we were always like on the very tail end of the classification. And today I discovered we're the fifth, you know, after Wine Enthusiasts. So I'm pretty happy about that. So slowly, slowly we're making our way up on this category. So Jeff, right, what I wanted to do, tell me what you've been up to the past 3 weeks. Quick, obviously.
Living La Dolce Vita. I went with my whole family last Monday. We had to go for our first Promessa di Soggiorno. So when you apply for your visa here, you have to go to a post office and get the stamp. And then they give you an appointment at the Questura, which is the police office, to validate your residency. So we did that. We had to drive an hour to Bra from Torino, and we got our fingers printed. And then in the middle of it, the internet went down in the police office, so we have to go back.
You're kidding.
No.
Dixon, like, hotspotted or anything?
No, I told her. I showed her my phone. I was like, I have 5G with Team. You want to do it?
Right.
Like, oh, we can't do that. You know, security issues. I was like, they're like, we'll SMS you for your next appointment. I haven't gotten anything. I have no idea. So, you know.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Don't forget to visit our YouTube channel, Mama Jumbo Shrimp, for fascinating videos covering Stevie Kim and her travels across Italy and beyond, meeting winemakers, eating local foods, and taking in the scenery. Now, back to the show.
That was your first brush with Questura.
Exactly. Right. Super nice. They were super, super, super nice. Bra is a very small village. The reason that we were in Bra is because when we did the paperwork at the post office, it was in Alba. And so I guess that linked us to Bra instead of Torino. And I've heard Torino.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Bra is a smaller city. So.
Right.
Okay. And then what else did
then,
you do?
Yeah. I think I had posted this in my stories a bit ago, but I had like what I've been dying for. I had the market visit at the Green Market that just blew me away. It was like every chicory radicchio was in bloom, and I bought them and made a great salad, and then went to this pastificio that's open in the smallest window of time. I don't know how they stay in business, but I made the time, and I got their homemade agnolotti and sugo, and it was just a great food experience. And then last night I had friends over, Lorenzo Pacin from Grifalco. He and his wife came over, and I cooked them dinner, and we used too much energy, and the lights went out again.
There, you have some issues with power supply in Italy, and Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi I've got now. Wi-Fi's good, but I was using the oven, the air fryer, and the kids were playing music all at the same time, and
right,
one of those had to give.
And then you also went to Paris, right? Because I knew that you were in Paris. I didn't see you.
I was
you.
In Paris. I was not there for wine. I was there for my family.
Oh, you weren't there for wine.
No.
Oh, okay.
I was just there, coincidentally, there on vacation.
Oh.
My daughter had break for Carnevale. We decided to take a trip to Paris. So we drove from Paris to Lyon, and we stopped at a producer named Alain Griot, which is a producer in Cros Hermitage, which was one of the most informative wines of my career. And it was great. It's the first time I'd ever been to the estate, and they showed me around. We drank some great wine. Spent the night in Lyon, which was an awesome restaurant, and then took the TGV to Paris. Stayed in Paris for a week. Went to Disneyland Paris, which was awesome.
Oh.
I recommend it. It was so much fun.
I went there when my kids were little.
They serve alcohol there, which makes it even better. And then yeah, we just, it was our daughter's first, I mean, this is so bougie, her first time to Paris. I'm assuming it won't be her last time, but we trumped her around, you know, dragged her around Paris. We walked 55 miles in 5 days.
Wow.
According to my walking app.
Oh, like, complimenti. Yeah, you mean like you're super fit.
Yeah. So that was it. And then just in between all that, I've been tasting lots of wine for the magazine and then doing my Italian class.
Excellent. So you've been very busy. Yeah.
Now I'm in Umbria this week, and then next week I'll be in Modena to be with the Lambrusco group to taste a bunch of wine in Emilia-Romagna, and then head back for more Italian classes.
Yeah, Giuseppe Rosati said, welcome to Umbria.
Grazie, bello.
Listen, okay, so what I would like to do with you, Jeff, if you're okay, is that, yes, we talk about kind of how you're being adapting to the Italian dolce vita, but I would like to also talk about some wine trends with you. Perfect. You know, and I read an article, and I actually sent you the link, an article by Felicity Carter. Do you know Felicity?
I've met her once or twice.
Yeah, she's so brilliant, and I'm sure you'll get a chance to meet her at Vinitaly this year. And she wrote an article in January. It's right in front of me. It's called The 7 Wine Trends in 2024. And she outlined 7, which are, she talks about boundaries, how they're increasingly blurring the lines between drink categories like wine, beer, and cocktails. Then she talks about cans as a trend because of the convenience. Because when we think of cans, of course, we think of just beer and cocktails, but now there's gaining traction, especially stateside, for wines as well. Then, of course, the Nolo alcohol. Then she predicts, and I think she's correct, about white wines taking over, you know, becoming much more prominent of red wines. She still thinks that the big bowl red wines are where it is in terms, especially the premium market. Then she talks about the wine tourism and health. So I want to understand what your thoughts were on some of these wine trends that she had predicted. If you want, we can start with the first one, which is about collapse of boundaries. So what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think I'm seeing that across everything is that, you know, nothing is sacrosanct to anyone. There's no just like, I do this. It's I drink this way, right? I don't just drink wine. I do it all. Not just because I'm an alcohol professional, but it's because I want variation in my life, including coffee, tea. You know, it's not just for alcohol. And it is. It's interesting to see that people aren't brand specific anymore. They're kind of wanting experiential, and they're willing to change and move the needle. I think there's a lot kind of to unpack in the collapse of boundaries. Maybe we do a whole one just on that, because I think it's an interesting talking point to kind of explore where wine fits in with that, because every place I'm talking to with producers, they're kind of worried. I think people see this as something to worry about. I see it as an opportunity, not necessarily a worrisome thing. If you make great wine, you're gonna be fine.
Well, that's
shitty wines.
You're fucked. No. Yeah. I mean, that's such an American thing, right? Like, you know, every battle, every problematic areas, we try to think of, you know, slice out a bit of heaven or opportunities, if you will. So I would like to understand better the spectrum in a way. And I hope we can expand on this topic because I think it is very interesting. And I think I absolutely agree with you. The only thing is I'm struggling having a dialogue with the younger generation. I don't know about you, because sometimes I feel like we're preaching to the choir, right? Like we're talking amongst ourselves, but we really do need to think of some younger people out there. I had a tasting for Col Dolce. I don't know if you know these guys. So of course the father is Francesco Marone Cinzano, you know, the Cinzano family. He looks like Ernest Hemingway. Yep. I feel like
and he smokes the toast.
Yeah, isn't it crazy? Yeah. I always look at him like Ernest Hemingway.
So handsome.
Yeah, he's terribly handsome and incredibly charismatic. And his son, Santiago, he's 26, maybe a bit younger. And I think he's really on it because he's trying to bring that young energy, you know, from the younger generation into his wine communication now. I think it's interesting, you know.
And I think there's a lot, you know, specifically here in Italy, and even when I was in Australia late last year, a lot of the younger, you know, I would say like sub 30 who are involved in the wine industry are doing a really good job. I'm thinking like there's a Chianti Classico producer named Giuliano di Sopra. So it's Matteo and Maddalena.
Yeah.
Both young kids who are making banger wines. And when you talk to them, they're so passionate. I think what just needs to be put out there, if we can find a platform for all of these young people who are either starting in the wine industry or their families have been in and they're starting to take over, is just allow them to tell their stories to that younger generation. I think that's going to capture more people because when you listen to them, you're just like, wow, this is so cool. When I do like the Chianti Classico boot camp and I bring young sommeliers around Chianti Classico and I introduce them to Maddalena and Matteo, they're thralled because they're the same age, right? And they're like, wow, how are these kids doing this? They weren't a legacy wine estate. This is something that was started. I think you're 100% right. We just got to give them the platform and let them loose.
Yeah,
we need to build their confidence because I think they need to get out more and just talk.
Yeah, we should think about, you know, I created like a special session for them at Vinitaly, but definitely we need to be more inclusive so that they can also tell us and explain to us what they like, what they don't like, what their thoughts are on wine consumptions, etc. When I was in South Africa, I don't know if we had spoke about this at all, there's an incredible energy in the winemaking because there are so many young winemakers. And they, in South Africa, the rules are very loose. So there are no rules about what kind of grapes and what kind of territory, where you should make it. You know, it's less regulated. So, which brings them a lot more opportunities.
Right.
So a lot of these young winemakers, they have acquired experiences abroad and in other important wineries in South Africa. They start their own winery. They don't have their own cantina. They don't have their own land. So they just, you know, rent it or they buy the grapes and they don't have their bottling equipment. They will do everything right. Just, you know, very, you know, from shared economy, you know, generation.
It's like the garage.
Yeah. And they are making some serious, interesting wines. So, you know, I think they are tapping into also this, you know, young way of not just producing wine, but also approaching the market. So I think the only thing that I wasn't that keen about is that they tend to like use the wax for their closures all the time and it annoys the shit out of me. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of what they do.
As long as they use the pliable wax, I'm cool with it. I hate the hard wax.
Yeah. No, it's very, very easy to strip up. But, you know, still the idea of like, why do you need it? Right. Because I see some of the wineries, they just have like a little like tape over it. Have you seen that?
Yeah. I like them when they don't have anything.
They don't have any. Yeah. They don't have the capsules. They don't have anything. So going from that to like doing the serious wax stuff again, I thought it was a bit odd. But anyway, so
that brings us to cans. Different vehicles for drinking, I think. I'm a huge believer in canned wine. I like it. When I had my brief stint as an importer, I signed up a Beaujolais producer that had a Beaujolais in a can, a Fleury. It was an actual cru Beaujolais in a can. And I love them. I think they're great. And I think people need to just not be, I like bag in a box. I like canned wine. I like, you name, as long as it's good, it doesn't matter what the vessel is, if it's for immediate consumption.
So I have a question for you. What is the best that you can recall bag in the box Italian wine? Like in terms of quality?
I think the best one that I've had recently is the Sandy Giovese from Amy Ezrin.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Amy's actually our ambassador as well. She's our Italian wine ambassador at Lodge.
Her wine, I gave like 90 points in the magazine. And we blind tasted, right? I had no idea what it was, but it was fresh. It was delicious. It was everything that you want a wine like that to be. It had some nuance to it. It wasn't just like fruity tooty. It had some structure to it. So that's one of the best wines I've tried in a box. I've tried more French wine in box than I have Italian wine. I think the French are a little more on the forefront with that. And the Austrians, there's some good Austrian bag in the box. There's a few importers in the States that have kind of cajoled producers, like a biodynamic producer, to put it in a bag in a box. And I love that wine. It's just called like Veltliner.
It's delicious. What about canned wines?
I think canned wines are awesome.
Have you tried Italian canned wines?
You know what? I'm trying to think. Again, I think Italy's behind the trend on this. I can't, to be honest. I have a former sommelier that worked for me. He's launching a new canned wine that I'll put up somewhere for people to see, but I haven't tried it yet. But yeah, Italy's behind the trend. Do you know what Italian canned wine?
Yeah, I mean, I know because there was a bunch of groups, they do special packaging. They're kind of the forerunners in packaging. They're called Ferro Trevici or something like that. And it's just a group. It's more like I don't think they own any vineyards, but it's the bottle and they're focused on the marketing and the packaging side. So they were always forerunners in canned wines, but I don't really know any others, to be quite honest. Why do you think the Italians are behind? They're not so keen about canned wines.
It's go back to like Stelvin, right?
Yeah.
The screw cap closures, Italy was way behind on that. They were way behind on Noma Cork, on DM, and now you're seeing people do all three. But I think the double-edged sword of Italy is its adherence towards tradition, which is good and bad. Just like you said, in South Africa, they don't have any rules, right? There's a lot of rules here. So, you know, I know for Prosecco, no Prosecco can be in a can, which is stupid, and be called Prosecco. From my understanding.
Because that's like the most accessible, right? Like the first type of wines, if you think about it.
Yeah. Like imagine how cool it would be to have. I was looking at this project a few years ago to put like a Prosecco in a can. I just couldn't figure it out because I was afraid of getting sued because I came up with this idea to like spell it phonetically so it said Prosecco.
Yeah. You know, yeah. You'll get
into. I don't have as much money as DOC Prosecco does.
But you can't call it Prosecco because of the disciplinare, right? So how can you, you know, commit to Prosecco if you can't call it that?
Well, you can get Glera and still have it, you know, Frizzante, but and just like call it something different. But you need that name. I think for mass market appeal, you need it to say.
I agree, right? Because if you go to Brazil, you order champagne and they'll bring you out Prosecco. I mean, it's like, right. You know, they're positioned in a very incredible way in all over the place, right? So, yeah, I mean, I would love to see Italian wine in cans.
I think you think about like, oh, you know what? I think there's a Lambrusco in a can. I don't know. I'm going to have to get back to you on that. But I think Lambrusco in a can would be great. Bobby Stuckey makes one. It's called Frico. Take an American who's putting that together.
You know, what we should do is we should organize a kind of like a blind tasting with canned wines one day.
It's my favorite. I love canned. I'll come to Verona.
We should do that. You know, we'll film it and everything. We'll do like, you know, not a live, but we'll do a whole post-production and everything. I think we should invite some of our friends to do blind tasting.
As long as I can shotgun a can, okay, I'll do it.
But yeah, we need to come up with a can-driven, I think, Italian wine. But you know, it has to be quality because if it's crap, then it's not going. Yeah. It's like, you know, there's a group called Svitati. Do you know this group? Mm-mm. It's led by Walter Massa.
Oh, I just saw him the other day.
Yeah. So like what they've done is with the Stelvin, it's been some time. They have been doing, you know, bottles in Stelvin and in cork because like different markets, you know, they require different packaging. And in Italy, they could just not sell, you know, in a Stelvin. So with screw caps. So what they've done is they did a kind of a, you know, a review of all of their wines, vertically speaking. And we did a blind tasting of some of the older vintages with Stelvin as versus cork. And I would say more than 6 out of 7 times, the Stelvin was a better quality.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, Stelvin, I mean, when I was in Australia, I had wines that were 25 years old under Stelvin, and like, they've been doing it forever. And you talk to the best producers in Australia and they're like, yeah, it's stupid to even think about using a cork. We saw there was a comment here that, you know, that says New England folks are not interested in canned wine. You know, I think there's hesitancy, but I think the younger generation is kind of leading the charge, because I see across the states when I travel there, the canned wine, specifically obviously during the summertime, really, really popping, like literally popping. And then Giuseppe says, I like this. He says, you know, this is what we mentioned earlier, that Italy has such a strong tradition. He said, wait 10 years and we'll have cans. Well, the problem is time is moving too fast. And I was talking about this with some producers here in Umbria today, that Italy can't wait 10 years, right?
I know.
Things are moving too quickly and they've got to just, you know, execute.
So listen, Jeff, I'm going to close up this live for now, because we're hitting the half an hour, 13 minutes mark. But let's talk about the low and no alcohol next time as well, and white wines, the upper trending of white wines. But I would also like to, as we are approaching Vinitaly, I have the schedule right in front of me, all the different tastings, and you will also be doing a tasting at Vinitaly. So we won't unveil that now,
I will.
But let's discuss what you'll be doing next week. We'll try to hook up again Monday. I'll still be stateside, and I'll be running an event, but I'll just make a quick breakaway for half an hour.
Perfect.
So we can have a Insta Live again. All right.
Awesome. I'll be Lambrusco strong next week. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ottimo.
Bye, Stevie.
Okay. Ciao, ragazzi.
Ciao.
Thank you for joining us on another installment of On the Road Edition, hosted by Stevie Kim. Join her again next week for more interesting content in the Italian wine scene. You can also find us at ItalianWinePodcast.com or wherever you get your pods. You can also check out our YouTube channel, Mama Jumbo Shrimp, to watch these interviews and the footage captured of each location. Cin cin!